nearly home. Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pros' number one most trusted app. A dream home isn't a dream home if it comes with a nightmare commute. That's why Realtor.com has Real Commute, so you can search by drive time. Download the Realtor.com app today, cause you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2025 proprietary survey.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, March 17th. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. Silicon Valley has a bot obsession. Software engineers used to burning the midnight oil, churning out lines and lines of code, and now using AI models to do the dirty work for them, to varying degrees of success. We're learning how the sudden shift in definition of tech work is changing the coding culture of the Bay Area. Then we're heading south to NVIDIA's annual AI conference in San Jose, where the word inference is on everybody's lips. Our reporter on the ground will be with us to explain how we got here. But first, software engineers prone to working solo are finding themselves as managers of ambitious but sometimes unruly workers. And those workers, they're not human. Tech heads are increasingly employing fleets of AI assistants to do their work. So much so that asking, "What are your bots up to?" has become one of the hottest questions in Silicon Valley. WSJ reporter Kate Clark has been following the trend. So, Kate, set the scene for us. It's a beautiful day in San Francisco. The crowds are descending on Dolores Park and people are sitting in the sun with their laptops open. What exactly is going on here?
That's exactly right. The AI agents, the AI personal assistants or work assistants have really taken over Silicon Valley and beyond. It is particularly evident that people are obsessed with getting these AI agents set up, whether it's creating a spreadsheet for them and completing some basic work tasks or coding for them, or it's planning a vacation and, you know, handling all of the logistical tasks that take up a lot of our time.
What were some of the stranger anecdotes about this bot management culture that you unearthed reporting this story?
It's really just how obsessed with it people are and how, you know, you would think this would make people more efficient, but it seems to me that people are actually a lot more attached to their devices now than they ever were. And they are staying up into the late hours, just kind of making sure that their AI agents are working. And so there is this anxiety that people feel right now because they know they can be so much more productive. They really want to make sure they are being as productive as possible. So I think this interesting dynamic is happening, which is that people are working more despite having these tools that should be making them work less.
This behavior appears to have swept the tech world incredibly quickly. What technology or LLM models have come on the scene to make all of this possible?
Basically, the main models from OpenAI and Anthropic have just been getting better and better. Every few weeks or every few months, they release model updates that have made these other tools built on top just work so much better. Even just in the last couple of weeks, OpenAI has made adjustments, improvements to their model that have made Codex, their AI coding tool, even better. So it's just kind of like the natural evolution of this LLM technology. And there are many, many startups that are building tools on top of the LLMs that are powering these agents. And they're just catching on. They're just getting better by the day. There's more money being invested in them. It's just constant change.
Now, I've watched enough Black Mirror to know that delegating all your grunt work to bots can have terrible repercussions. Did you hear of any instances where this form of software engineering has gone incredibly wrong?
For the most part, it's just they make mistakes and they mess everything up and you have to restart. You hear things about people's entire inboxes being deleted because of the stage we're at, which is really just people learning to use them, learning to see their capabilities. We really haven't gotten to the part where there's horror stories after horror stories. For now, I think it's just people get irritated because they've got one, two, three, four agents working on their behalf, and they're just not doing the things that they're asking them to do, and they feel like they're basically babysitting the AI bots.
Right, like human management in a way.
Exactly like human management, which is also a funny part of all of this.
Software engineering is a skill that a lot of these people probably spent a lot of time honing. And in the Bay Area in particular, your ability to engineer was almost a status signifier. Is there any sense to all of this that this skill has just been rendered obsolete? And if so, is there any sense of nostalgia or sadness wrapped up in that?
Definitely. I came across such a broad range from people being really upset at the idea that the skill they spent their life learning is no longer relevant. I also came across a lot of people that feel like it is still incredibly important to understand the building blocks in order to successfully manage the AI agents. But we're very quickly moving into an era where, like, you and me can just use natural English language to command these agents to create websites, to create products. And that as we get deeper into that chapter, there will be a lot more concerns about job loss for engineers. There already are signs of that. But, you know, in a few more months, just because of how fast this is moving, there'll probably be a much, much bigger story to tell about the true impact on software engineers.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Kate Clark. Are you deploying AI assistants in your work? If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to let us know in the comments. Coming up, demand for inference computing is ramping up. We break down what this means for NVIDIA's business model. That's after the break.
Welcome to Paris Pizzeria. Your blind date is already at the table, and here she is. Cousin Brenda, what are you doing here? You're married anyway.
Substitution brought to you by Paddy Power. Cousin Brenda makes way for Beth, the office crush.
Oh, get in! You might not always pick the right starter, but your sub can still deliver. Because with Paddy's Super Sub, your bet rolls over to the player coming on. Paddy Power.
Valid on selected leagues and markets only. Pre-match and in-play bets on qualifying player outcome selections only. T's and C's and exclusions apply. 18+, gambleaware.org.
This week sees the return of NVIDIA GTC, the chipmaker's mammoth AI conference held in San Jose. All eyes yesterday were on Jensen Huang, the leather-jacketed CEO who addressed the rise of inference computing and what that means for the company going forward.
Finally, AI is able to do productive work, and therefore the inflection point of inference has arrived.
We got the lay of the land from WSJ reporter Robbie Whelan, who spoke to us from a car on the highway while heading to the conference. Robbie, what are we expecting to hear from NVIDIA?
NVIDIA is getting ready to roll out a brand new chip using technology from a company called Groq, which NVIDIA recently essentially acquired. Didn't fully acquire the company, but they paid $20 billion to license Groq's technology, which is chip design technology, and to hire Groq's top leadership. So basically, it was what's called an acqui-hire. And the reason why they did this was because NVIDIA, at the moment, dominates the world of what's known as AI training, but they don't have quite as much of a foothold in what's known as AI inference. And AI inference means how to run models and make them respond to your user queries faster.
What are the different requirements for inference versus AI training chips?
Inference requires a lot more memory. So every computer chip that is in your iPhone or our laptops or even in data centers, it's actually a combination of multiple chips. When we talk about a chip, we talk about a processor, which in NVIDIA's case is called a GPU. And then there's other types of processors called CPUs. And then there's a whole bunch of chips that are known as memory chips. And those are the ones that allow the computer brain to kind of go back into its memory and access all of its training, access all the databases that have been pumped into it to teach it how to be an AI model. And so inference requires a lot more memory because you have these models that are working to remember everything that they've been trained. And training requires a lot more raw computing power. So if you think of training an AI model as just doing billions and billions of math problems over and over again. Whereas inference, which means allowing a model to go out into the wild and respond to user queries, they have to go back to all of the information that's been pumped into the model via training, they have to access it. And that means a lot more memory chips are required, a lot more high bandwidth memory. Inference also requires a lot of computing power. It's not like it doesn't require any good processing at all. It does require fast processors in order to act quickly. But the name of the game right now is driving down costs to consumers and also driving speed to consumers. The phase we're in right now, we've done a lot of growth, a lot of training of models. Now we're trying to monetize those models. And to do that, you have to have really fast, reliable response times. And so that means the quality of the answer has to be good and has to come quickly. And so that's why inference requires such a different computing profile than training.
And given NVIDIA's focus on AI training chips so far, and this new inference that's coming in, does that put NVIDIA on the back foot in this space? Will it have a hard time competing here?
The short answer is no. I don't think they're going to be too far behind when it comes to sort of developing products quickly that serve the inference computing needs. And more importantly, perhaps, locking up the supply chain that is needed for it to produce inference. So, for example, right now, there's a big crunch in supply of memory chips. There's a certain number of companies, three in particular, that make memory chips that are usable in AI systems. And NVIDIA is one of the biggest buyers of those chips. And they have essentially locked up their supply for the next 2 or 3 years. But in the age of inference, there's a real worry from a lot of people who I talk to in the AI world that NVIDIA's margins are not going to remain that high for very long. And the reason for that is because when you go from producing a luxury product that's very expensive and you do it better than anyone else to producing a product that's meant to save users money, which is what's happening in the transition from training to inference, it's very hard to sustain high profit margins.
And you mentioned there are a few competitors in this space with them. Can you talk us through a few of those?
There's a company called Cerebras. It's a startup that has raised a ton of money and recently did a $10 billion licensing deal with OpenAI to help OpenAI build its own custom chips for inferencing. There's a number of other startups that are sort of in stealth mode that I know about but can't talk about yet. There's a company that we talked about called AR Labs that we wrote stories about recently in the Wall Street Journal that makes a sort of a product that's a different type of chip. It's called an interconnectivity chip that uses advanced fiber optics and lasers in order to make inference computing faster. It's not just in the processors, in other words, it's in all the hardware that goes around the main processors that drive AI computing. The entire ecosystem is seeing much more competition. And then Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, they are going all in on inference as well and trying to strike deals with model developers. They're a lot smaller than NVIDIA, but they are growing very fast and rolling out products very quickly.
That was WSJ tech reporter Robbie Whelan. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to leave us a comment. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Katie Ferguson. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back later this morning with TMB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.